Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us. We're going to have a lot of fun this evening. My guest is Dale Allen Hoffman, who is an internationally known expert on the words of Jesus, who was really named Yeshua in his actual language, which was Aramaic. And Dale is an Aramaic scholar who has studied all of that. So we're going to have a very interesting time. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. This show in general is about interviewing people who are having a different kind of life because of the experiences they've had and choosing to live life differently. So a shaman, a mystic, a psychic, a healer has an experience that most people don't have. And because they have that experience, the people that don't have that experience don't know what to make of us. You know, if you can't hear the music, you don't know why the people are dancing. But that's part of the point. If you're having the experience, life changes. You know something as in a very personal, very solid, very visceral way. And that's in comparison to being told about something. So in most traditions, there is a storyline which everybody knows and is taught from the time that they're children, whatever that is. And it's about the experience of somebody who was a spiritual master and had experiences. And that master typically was also a teacher and had followers and tried to explain to the followers two things. One, how to have that experience so that they could understand in a real way what the teacher is saying. And secondly, trying to explain it to them through metaphors, through any way that they could express this inexpressible, unexplainable experience. And over time, after the teacher dies, there are some disciples that go out into the world who have actually had the experience and really have the deep understanding. And there are others that were there and heard the explanations. But by the second generation, all of those people are gone as well. And now you have people that have never met the master and never met the master's disciples telling the story and writing the story down. And that story in many traditions not only gets written down, it gets translated into other languages. And in each translation, it's not just that it's trying to literally translate the words, they're trying to also translate the meaning into a cultural context. So if all the Middle Eastern languages at their spiritual essence not only have the meaning of the words, there are subtexts, you know, multiple meanings to the words. And in some cases, each letter has a meaning. The sequence of the letters has a numerological meaning. There's all this mystical information that's in the way the words were put together. So you translate that into another language which doesn't have that context, doesn't understand that mystical aspect of it, and has its own traditions. And you start getting people making choices about what the meaning of the word is based on their world and their worldview. And in the Christian tradition, it went from the words of Jesus in Aramaic to Greek translations, to English translations, and at each step along the way, things were changed. Were they changed intentionally? I don't know if they were changed intentionally, but they were certainly changed because of not understanding the experience and the meaning of the words in the original language as spoken by the teacher. That, to me, that's a critical point in the whole world of the shaman. The shaman may use ritual and tradition and ceremony as an entry point into the experience, but the work of the shaman is really about making direct contact. You might call it intuition, you might call it a sixth sense or some other way of making a connection to what's called spirit, divinity, God, the universe. There are as many words for it as there are languages and points of view. But this idea that there is a greater consciousness and you can put yourself into a state of personal consciousness where you're in touch with that greater consciousness and therefore getting information that is only available from that larger source. Pretty interesting stuff. Of course, if the people around you don't think that you're a living master or even very smart, you get called crazy because they don't know what to make of it. And that's totally understandable, but really not a whole lot of fun for the person that's having the experience and can't explain it. So this evening, we have this rare opportunity to talk to somebody who has actually read the old texts, learned the spoken language of Aramaic, and can talk with us about what it, not only what Jesus actually said based on the earliest possible writings of the story, but what it sounded like. And since these were prayers that were used over and over again in that language and were said by him, this is going to be a very interesting conversation. So I want to leave you with the idea that experience always trumps tradition or anything that's written down. There is no way to replace or understand that experience other than having it. And tonight we're going to talk about the experiences of the Master Yeshua and how those were first expressed. So we're going to have a very interesting time. That's this evening's metaphysical musing. And I'm going to cut it kind of short because I'm really interested in hearing what Dale has to say. So, Dale Allen Hoffman, you with us?
Oh, yes, I'm here.
So glad to have you here. As you can tell, I'm excited about this subject.
Thank you, David. And I couldn't have said it better myself. I was right there with every word that you were saying, so I was right there.
Well, thank you. So there, you have a whole body of knowledge, and you also have this ability to speak in that language and do the chants in that language. And I want us to get as much of that as we possibly can. But I also always, in doing this show, ask people, how did you wind up here? How did you wind up doing this? What was the path that led you here? Right. And because people have a tendency to look at those of us that are doing this, especially if we've been doing it for a long time, and say one of two things. Oh, you must have been like this as a kid, or you're just so amazing, you know, you've got so much experience, la 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 la. And not look at however many years or decades of strange experiences and struggles and life-changing things happening went into it, all the challenges. And that to me is the juicy part of the conversation with anybody that does this work. So can you, I'm sure there's a long version that would take an entire meal, maybe a couple of days, but what's the short version of your path?
Well, to put it quick, as quick as I can, when I was a kid, I grew up in the Methodist and Episcopalian churches. My grandmother was a pillar in the Methodist church, and I was happy to be in the Methodist. I'm happy now that I was in the Methodist church at that time because it wasn't a real heavy, dogmatic, fire and brimstone experience. So I never really went, ooh, I hate this. But I was always the kid that was asking the questions like, you know, I would say, look, Luke 17:20 says, and I would say it, to a minister or the Sunday school teacher, and they'd be like, "What are you reading?" You know, and then I would look at it and go, "Oh, wait, okay, I thought I saw something else there." And jumping forward a few years, I started writing, like, riffing on the words of Jesus, just from the New King James and from the 1611 King James, like rephrasing the things that he was saying and writing pages and pages and pages of stuff, just pure drivel, some of it, but some of it was good. But I used to spend a lot of time in nature when I was a kid. I had a lot of very deep experiences that I couldn't understand until I was in my 20s. And one of those things, you know, you mentioned something where some people say to me, "Oh, you're gifted," or, you know, "You've been like this the whole time," or "You were born that way," or whatever, anything like that. It's like, look, you know, I had years of intense suicidal thoughts and actions. I've had, you know, many, many, many dark nights of the soul. Haven't had one in, I don't even know when the last one was at this point. But it took me, you know, a lot of really just horrible, for me, almost like wandering in circles, not even knowing where I was. But I always had like this something inside of me that knew there was something more than to life than the way I was living. And it was when I was 19 years old. I was in New York City and studying with my acting coach. His name was Bob Collier. He named himself after a man named Robert Collier, who wrote the book that started it all for me when I was 19 years old. It's called The Secret of the Ages. It was written in, I'd say, the 20s or so, 1920s. And it was like reading this book, I realized, it was the first time in my life that I realized that I was alive, is the best way I could put it. Like, there was me, and there was like an eye behind the eye. And things, you would think, oh, everything became hunky-dory and beautiful then, and there was beautiful experiences, but it seemed like things got more intense, and things started speeding up, and it seemed like in a lot of ways my life was falling apart. But it was something that happened in 1995 that people kept saying, look, there's this guy, his name's Michael Rice. He, you know, teaches the Aramaic teachings of Jesus. I'm like, the what? Arabic? And they're like, no, Aramaic. I'm like, Arabic? They're like, no, Aramaic. Right. I'm like, what's Aramaic? They're like, it's the language Jesus spoke. And my reaction was, he didn't speak English? And everybody laughs in my face, you know?
Right.
See, I had these experiences when I was a kid, and especially as a teenager, where I would look at the words on the page in the Bible, but I would see, literally, in the beginning, I would just interpret it differently, but when I got to be in my mid-teens, I started seeing almost like layers of red underneath the words, like an outline almost, and I would have these really deep interpretations of what I was reading on the page, but I never heard anybody understand or talk about what I was, you know, talking about. But it was when I heard Michael Rice live for the first time. It was Clearwater, Florida. The workshop was called Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And Michael said to me, he still says to me to this day, he's like, Dale, I could have peeled you off the ceiling, because the things he was saying were the words that I was seeing beneath the words when I was actually reading the words of Jesus in the Bible.
Right.
It was just pure high fidelity. And I walked up to him at the break in tears, shaking, and laughing simultaneously, and I said, whatever it is, I want it, and I want all of it. I need every 100% of everything you've got. And he said, okay, come out to Heartland, my sanctuary out in the Ozark Mountains, southern Missouri, and he's like, just come on out. And I spent an entire summer out there, and I dove in headfirst, not into the concepts and the language, although that was there, but into the experience of how do I put this into practice? How is it that I actually live what's there in the most original context that we are aware of it, rather than just understanding the stuff, you know, all the different parameters and like the fences to live within and the guidelines. Instead of understanding that in my mind, how do I actually awaken the actual direct experience in my heart and live it? And from that point on, my life was never the same. And again, I went through years of dark, dark, dark. But it was like once that door opened, it never shut again. I may have ignored that the door was open sometimes, that door of consciousness, but it's never shut again. And then now it's been, I don't even know when the last time that I really felt, you know, dark. It just, after a while, when you actually face those things inside of yourself that most, you know, New Age philosophies tell you to look away from. When you learn to look at them and face them head on, you process them. And then when you process them, you realize what wholeness really means. And it's not about following a master. It's about stepping into those footprints and having the experience yourself until you realize ultimately, oh my God, these are my own footprints now. And that's the thing that I cherish the most, is that contact, that intimate contact with that presence. It's something that, everything else in my life, other than maybe family, is secondary to that, you know.
And, you know, the incredible story you're telling is very much the story of everybody who goes through this. You know, in order to be in the light, all the darkness has to come up. Everybody goes through usually many, many dark nights of the soul, and many versions of walkabout where you leave everything you know behind and go off confused, not knowing what's going to happen to you. But you know that there's something more and you're going to find it. And you're not going to be done with this walkabout until you find out what you're supposed to know. So, yeah. And
I love that you're using the word walkabout. I have a very deep, tender place. I get a lump in my throat. I have a tender place in my heart for the Aborigines of Australia, and I just a very tender place. So when I hear the word walkabout, it kind of it puts a smile on my face, like a beautiful, bittersweet smile. So thank you for using that word.
Well, I think it's the most descriptive word, and I think all of us that do this kind of searching on our own at some point realize that we're on walkabout, and that we're on walkabout over and over and over again as we come to new levels in our lives and go off on a new strange adventure. What I think most people don't realize is we're all on walkabout. That's what being alive on this planet is about, especially at this time in history. And, people try and go, no, everything's got to stay the same, and I'm in control of all this. And I'm like, yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, when I'm out, I travel a lot. This weekend I'll be in Raleigh, North Carolina, and then I've got 3 days in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. But I see a lot of people, it's like they're trying to be the light. They don't want to have, it's like things in their life are unraveling, falling apart, and they're having these really deep experiences of almost turmoil. And they're trying to, like, turn away from those experiences and affirm that they are light. I am light, I am light, I am light. And I'm telling them, let me give you an example of this. In Aramaic, the light of the sun is equivalent to the light of God. It's a light that all that it can do is shine. It only knows itself, all that it can do is shine. And I tell people the word for human consciousness, human light in Aramaic is nuhra. Which is equivalent to the light of the sun would be a masculine light, meaning that it does one thing, it only knows itself. The lunar light, the moonlight, the human light is a feminine light. And I'll tell people, what's unique about the light of the moon versus the light of the sun? And it's reflective. It's still the light of the sun, but it's reflecting that light back. And then the next question is, what part of the moon does the light of the sun choose not to shine on? And immediately people say, the dark side. I say, whoa, that was a trick question. I said, what part of the moon does the light of the sun choose not to shine on? And they go, oh. I say, all that the light of the sun can do is shine, but the part of the moon that doesn't get that light is the part that's turned away. And we're told in so many of these sort of hunky-dory New Agey philosophies to turn away from that dark and try to convince myself that I am light. But unfortunately, that's not what light is. Light shines on everything. And what is enlightenment if not the realization that something was once in darkness? My friend Justice Barrymore used to say that. And the process of being light, of being whole, is embracing those places within ourselves that hurt, that are in pain. And it doesn't mean you give in to them. You can use your affirmations of I am light, But what we really need to do is embrace those places within ourselves that we've shoved off into the darkened corners. That's what Yeshua's work was all about. That word Satana was not a person. Satan was not a person. Satan, literally in Aramaic, Satana means a being divided against itself.
Mm-hmm.
That's something to remember. The tempter, the accuser, the resister, the devil, Akil Kartza in Aramaic, or Shiada, the different words that we have for devil, all that is all stuff that happens in our own heart. He wasn't tempted in the desert by a snake or some sort of being, some sort of dark being. That was his own temptation in his own personal desert within his own heart. And all of us have to remember, look, there was nothing, that whole thing, if he was the only begotten in the Greek sense, monogenes is the word in Greek, if he was only begotten, then that means he lied to us. Because if he's the only son of God, that means that when he said, you can do all that I have done and even greater things, that he lied. And I'm a person who thinks, or who knows, there's no way that was a lie. Obviously, the term was off in the first place, in the Greek sense at least. But
right. Right. Well, the translation to Greek is a huge change in the meaning of so many things, including the idea that God is somewhere in the sky and looks like a man, which is very, very Greek. All their gods were either in the clouds or on top of a mountain. So there were many, many things that changed because of cultural context as well as the languages being so different.
Yeah, and any language, one language to another, you can't bring everything across. There's no way. And even remembering, too, really keeping it in perspective with people, I say, look, this is stuff that's written down. You need to find what resonates in your heart. This, and this is something that I do it to intentionally push buttons. I'll say, this could all be a forgery. This could all be just made up. And I say right. that just to get people to find out if they're really connected to their center or if they've put all of their faith in words on a page rather than doing the work that needs to be done for them to make the connection within themselves so that they can create their own words on the page that are conscious and living and breathing like the words that Yeshua revealed to us 2,000 years ago now.
Right, right. You know, I'm, as you said, I'm right there with you. One of the things for me, and I was not raised as a Christian, kind of came to Christian writings and all the rest of it later. And my personal perspective is I want to know what Yeshua said as close to the way he said it as possible. And I really don't care very much about the Old Testament relationship to those words or what Paul or anyone else who wrote in the New Testament had to say, other than the fact that they were reporting the words of Yeshua and that the stories have commonalities. So there are several reporters saying, well, he said this. I want to know what he said, because in what he said is the teaching, and the rest of it is interpretation and politics and, you know, all the other things that go on in human beings. But it's like, what did he say? What exactly did he say? And we're getting close to the break, but I'll throw out the one piece that I, in the little bit of reading that I've done about what Jesus said in Aramaic, I was fascinated with the word sin, which in Greek is the archery term to miss the target, you know, to miss the bullseye. And as I read it, the word in Aramaic is unripe.
Yes.
Which is agrarian and makes perfect sense. He was always talking to illiterate agrarian people, and it just, there's no judgment in it. It's just, you're not ready yet.
That's it, exactly. Just, that word in Arab, well, unripe technically would be the word evil, which is bishah, which would mean, it was also an archery term in Aramaic. It meant off target completely. The word for sin is the word chatah, chet in Hebrew, which means, you know, you're on the target, but you didn't hit the bullseye. But, and I tell people what's more accurate than that, I know the break's coming up. In the Old Testament, Elohim was saying in the Hebrew Bible, he would create and create and create, and he kept saying, and it was good, and it was good. But there's not really a word for good in ancient Hebrew or ancient Aramaic. That word, what it really means is ripe, R-I-P-E, like a piece of fruit. And it was fertile, it was rich for right here, right now, in this present moment. And maybe a few minutes from now, it could be unripe, it could be evil, past its point of ripeness, or not to the point of ripeness yet. And that's, it's amazing, his teaching, Yeshua's teaching lines right up with that. That word is tuv, and it was tuv, which means
fertile. Well, we're going to have to go to the break. For those that saw on Facebook that we were having phone problems, we do have a call in line, and I will give that number as soon as we come back from the break. And we're going to come back and have more fascinating conversation and hear some of spoken Aramaic, which I'm looking forward to, when we come back from the break and have more with Dale Allen Hoffman on The Farkas Files here on Empower Radio. Stay with us. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Twenty years ago, the Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law. The act was a huge step forward for the 50 million people in this country living with a disability, and the culmination of years of effort by those who marched and spoke up and refused to be treated as second-class citizens. It helped renew the promise that here in America, we're defined not by our limitations, but by our potential. As we celebrate the 20th anniversary of this historic legislation, it's important to remember that we're still fulfilling that promise. We're still working to secure the rights guaranteed by the ADA, the right to live and work without limits, the right to equal justice under the law, and the right of every person in this country to reach for the American dream. We've come a long way since 1990, and I'm committed to making even more progress in the years ahead. Visit disability.gov to see how you can help.
Brought to you by the American Association of People with Disabilities and the Ad Council.
I have been in this country 32 years, and this is how I live united. America has always been the land of promise, and in my community, many families have come for a better life. Coming from another culture myself, I know the desire to become part of a community, to feel at home, and to gain the tools for our children and families to succeed. So I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to look beyond their histories and to see what opportunities are available. We help them get involved with their kids' schools, network within the community, and when we do, we unite them. We make the community stronger. What I do is something I wish someone had done for me, and I am so grateful I am able to. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunities and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Sassy!
This week's episode, Fire at the Shed.
Gee, Johnny, this rope swing sure is swell. Don't I know it. Hey, it's Sassy! I think she's trying to tell us something. Mr. Gunderson? What about Mr. Gunderson? A fire? Mr. Gunderson's trapped? Where, Sassy? Where? What, Sassy? Now that you've got our attention, you'd like to take a moment to talk about shelter pets? Shelter pets in general are well-adjusted, healthy, and love being with people? Sassy, we don't have time! Pets often end up in shelters due to owner problems like divorce or allergies? That's great, Sassy, but what about the fire? There is no fire! You're just messing with our heads? Sassy!
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we are back with Dale Allen Hoffman. And I want to give out the call-in number. We only have one line open. There was a problem with the phone lines. We didn't think we were going to have any call-in lines tonight. We're very excited that we have at least one. So call the number. If you get a busy signal, just keep calling. That number is 248-809-3475. 248-809-3475, not the usual number that I give out. So, Dale, we're having a great time just chatting as two people who have gone through interesting experiences, but you started getting into the meat and potatoes of the language, and that to me is the totally fascinating. So give us some more of the translation issues and the issues of language, but also speak some more Aramaic for us. What did some of the famous, well-known things that Yeshua said, what do they sound like and what did they mean in the original language?
You know, to sort of preface it, there's something that I think would be a beautiful distinction to make. Actually, I've got two, and then we can get into maybe some of the phrases and prayers. One is that in John 15:16, it says, in the King James Bible, it says, anything you ask the Father in my name, he will give it to you, or he may give it to you, or it will be given, etc. There's different ways that it's translated. One thing that's important to remember is, now I use the word Yeshua. Occasionally I'll say Jesus just as a point of reference. In Aramaic, that word, when he said pray in my name, what he actually said was pray in my Shem in Aramaic, Sluta Shem. Shem is a little different than the word name. Now, this is something that's really important when we're kind of looking toward a master and we're, you know, putting all the eggs in his basket in a way, and now we're trying to get some of his eggs rather than getting our own eggs. People will be like, you know, I say this, I pray in the name of the Lord Jesus. But that word Shem doesn't mean name in the way that we think of name. As an example, right. if I say Michael Jackson to you, you're not just seeing the word Michael Jackson. What's happening for you right now? You're hearing his voice, the dancing, the singing. You're perceiving his overall consciousness. So that word Shem in Hebrew and Aramaic, in the Semitic sense and in Arabic, what that really means is like, as all that I am, almost like the imprint, the vibration of everything that I am from this kind of consciousness. So he wasn't saying in my name. Of course, if you say, I pray in the name of the Lord Jesus, his name wasn't Jesus. Jesus comes from the Greek Latinized Jesus, which means hail Zeus. And also in Aramaic, there was no J sound. There's no J in Aramaic. Right. There's no J sound in ancient Aramaic. But even more important than that distinction is this. In the beginning of the Gospel of John, it says, in the beginning was the Word, Bereshit etoihua milta. Milta is that word, word. Now, there's something really interesting about that word in Aramaic. It's logos in the Greek. Milta in Aramaic, the ta sound at the end of milta genders it feminine, okay? Now, I'm going to explain that to you. Another sister word that's gendered feminine is mokuta, which is the word kingdom. The ta genders that word also feminine, right. Kingdom can't be translated as kingdom. If you say queendom, that's incorrect also because it's not a dom. It's not about a king or a queen. It's about an essence, a state of being. Now, here it is. Let me explain feminine and masculine in terms of language. My perception of a book, let's say I was holding a book in my hand, my perception of that book would be feminine in language. What that means is it's a perception, it's an attitude, it's a state of being. You could say it's an experience, spiritual experience for me, but I can't show you my feminine. I can't show you my perception, in other words. I can't say, okay, look, here's my perception. The book itself is masculine. It's physical matter. It's manifest. It's right here in my hand, and it's obvious. It's something that's obvious. I can say, look, you can let me show you this. This is a masculine book, and you look at that book. When you look at kingdom, it doesn't mean something that you can find. It's not something you can be located in time and space. Malkuta deshmaya, the word heaven, shemaya, shem, of course, means that overall consciousness. The ayah at the end is a sound that means something that has no boundary, no beginning and no ending, mm-hmm. which means that either it's everywhere or it's nowhere. So when you have Malkuta Dashmaya, it's feminine. It's not a place that you can find. That goes against his own laws, which is why he said, look, if heaven was in the sky, the birds would get there first. His followers would have understood that. Now, back to that word, though, milta. What does that mean? Milta, in the beginning, was the Word. Now, if you look at that word in Aramaic, now this text, of course, John, you know, pretty much all scholars agree, was originally written in Greek. But what's important is, you know, and a lot of Yeshua's teachings, too, people can split hairs about what was written first, even though we know that dozens and dozens of Aramaic originals were destroyed as early as the first century. It was still spoken first in Aramaic. Now, that word milta, ta, my perception of the word on the page in the Gospel of John, the word is feminine. The word itself on the page is what? Masculine. So what I'm saying right. is in Yeshua's own language, in the beginning was not the word on the page. That would be considered blasphemy. In the beginning was the perception, the consciousness that perceives the word on the page. In the beginning was consciousness. That consciousness was with God. That consciousness was God. Everything that was ever created was created from God, through God, into God, as God. There's nothing outside of God. And only the consciousness of God is that which exists. Darkness cannot comprehend or overtake that light or that consciousness. And it's important for people to remember that in Yeshua's own teachings, that's what he was talking about with the Torah. He was like, look, he knew the Torah inside out. He would have been fairly fluent in Hebrew, at least able to read the Torah. And he was constantly telling us, it's not about the fences you live within. It's not about the words on the page. It's not about the things that you're living up to. It's about how conscious are you and how often are you coming from the rooted center of your own being. It's about having that right. direct connection and experience within yourself and that consciousness, that presence, because outside of presence, everything is basically coded. He said that too. They said, why do you teach in parables? And he said, to you it's given to see the kingdom. He was saying that to his disciples, but to those outside, everything is in parable. And if you look at it in Aramaic, he wasn't really saying to those outside of discipleship. He's saying to those that are not within the kingdom, who do not have that conscious presence in their life, everything that they see is coded. Everything they see is a parable because they do not see into the true nature of all that truly is.
Right.
And, I mean, it's the essence of everything he was talking about was not a concept, but about that direct experience. And I'm so glad you started with that in the beginning of the show.
Well, you also, the whole masculine, feminine, yang and yin, but even more than that, we now can talk about in quantum physics terms, particles versus waves.
Absolutely.
You know, what's physical, what is considered masculine, and what is consciousness, what is energy, what is waveforms, is in whatever way feminine. It's the place that things come from. The name of the Holy Spirit in Hebrew is Shekhinah, and that's feminine.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the source, and that's in so many ways what's been, if not eliminated, pushed to the side in most of what's been written in Christianity. It's a very male set of writings and values, when the underlying teachings were, in the spiritual sense, very feminine. And there's a way that I look at Jesus when I look at him as a master and a shaman, where he's teaching the divine feminine. He's a teacher of the divine feminine essence, and unfortunately that's not the way the writings came through.
Yeah, that's, you know, something I say all the time, probably in every single event that I do, is his original Aramaic teachings were almost completely in the high 90 percentile feminine. And what that meant was it was directly experiential, and it was not concepts, and it wasn't places that you go to and places you can find or something that you can find in a book, and heaven is not a place that you can walk to, because it's not.
It's an experience.
And he says that to Pilatos, to Pilate. He said, if they're like, well, where's this great kingdom that you're a supposed master of? And he's like, my kingdom is of no location within time and space, because if it was something that was manifest, then my handlers would have whisked me away so that you could do me no harm. And then he says something that in Aramaic is essentially saying, you can't find the essence that I'm speaking of in anything that is manifest unless you see into the true nature of where that manifestation comes from, the essence. And that's the particle and the wave, again, that you were talking about.
Right. Right, or the illusion, as some of the Eastern traditions would say, of the physical world and the reality of the spiritual world.
Oh, absolutely. The Maya, the divine play, the Lila in Sanskrit. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you know, that's one of the things that fascinates me also is if you look at any of the spiritual, the very old spiritual traditions that have writings that go back thousands of years, culturally they're very different. But in terms of what they're expressing, what they're trying to demonstrate and both lead people to and explain, it's all the same stuff. Doesn't matter whether it's Native American, Hindu, Buddhist, the Egyptian stuff, it's all basically the same thing.
It really is, yeah.
And even the methodologies have a lot of similarities, and the symbols have a lot of similarities. So, but in a very small amount of historic time, all that stuff has kind of been pushed to the side as being dangerous or fearful or in some way wrong. When that's the essence of everything that was the original teachings.
Yeah, I find humor. It's almost like a pitiful humor in the fact that most of what's being taught in his name is 100% exactly opposite of what it said, what the original Semitic context is of it. Ancient Semitic context, that's something else that I want to just real quickly mention, that modern Aramaic or modern Syriac, a lot of the meanings, the prefixes, on, toward, or at versus with or within, a lot of these things have become skewed, prefixes especially, which change everything. Not skewed, they're just different than what they were 2,000 years ago, much like in English, we don't know what words mean. You know, if I say terrific, everybody thinks, oh, that's great, but no, 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 no. When Perry Como said in the 50s, the traffic is terrific, he wasn't saying it was beautiful. He was saying it was, you know, terrifying. Or right. The word awful, you know, oh, that's awful. What does awful mean? In the turn of the 20th century, awful meant full of awe. It was a beautiful experience that basically was almost too much for me to comprehend. It was so incredibly beautiful. Awful today means something that's horrible, or tell him I said he's bad, you know. Bad right. means many different things. A lot of times it means good. It means you're as cool as you can possibly be. Cool, what does that mean? Cold body temperature? And we don't think about those kinds of things just in the 50-year time period that we lost the meaning of, God, put 2,000 years in, or even just, you know, go back to the 1611 King James. How many people do you know that say, verily, verily? I don't know anybody that says that. But what if I told you in Aramaic, that word, verily, verily, is amen, amen. Technically, amen, amen.
Right.
We don't see that looking at the King James. When he said verily or assuredly, it was that word amen from this rooted earth center, he was saying, as sure as this earth beneath my feet, what I'm saying to you, you know. And it's rich. And not even just like Aramaic is a miracle language, anything, get back as close as you can to the earliest language that you can get, especially the language that it was spoken and taught in, because you're going to get a richness and a depth. The Quran, my true Islam friends, Islamic friends, they literally say, they're like, Dale, if you're not reading it in Arabic, you're not reading the Quran. And
right.
I get that. I understand what they're saying. I really do.
Right. Well, before we get too close to the end of the show, let's give people information on how to find you and tell them a little bit about the materials you have available, because I know you have DVDs and other things.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I think I was going to send you a DVD, and I don't know if we actually did it.
No, so. I never did get that, but I'd love to
that.
Get it.
I will get it to you, because I know I've got your address. Yeah, I've got a DVD that came out on New Year's Day called, it's called The Word, Sacred Illumination on the Original Aramaic Teachings of Yeshua, and I hit on some primary topics like kingdom and heaven and Satan and prayer, and I just, you know, show it from a more ancient Semitic understanding. I've got, I don't know how many CD programs, some single disc, some double disc programs, somewhere around 10. You go on my website. My website is daleallenhoffman.com, daleallenhoffman.com. Or you can go to AramaicHealingCircle.com, or the way I make it easy, go to Google, write Dale Aramaic, and all kinds of stuff will pop up immediately.
Right.
You'll find pages, my YouTube page. There's dozens and dozens of videos, free audio all over my website, free writings. The website's full of all kinds. It has my schedule. And we just now just started working out. We're going to be completely revamping my website in a few months. Right now we're in the planning phase, and it's going to be like a truly interactive, awesome experience. And like I also say, sign up on my email list. There's links all over my website to sign up on my email list, because I'm always sending out free MP3s and all kinds of stuff. So,
fantastic.
Definitely.
Yeah, and if people just go to thefarkasfiles.com, there will be a link to the recording of this show if they want to share it or will listen to it again. And your contact information is on there as well.
Cool.
So, well, we still got a few minutes. One of the things that you touched on, and it's always been one of the more important things that Yeshua said for me, is all that I can do and more you can do.
Mm-hmm.
How does that sound in Aramaic? Because I'm fascinated with the sound of the language.
I'd have to look at it. I don't have one of my Bibles are all packed
okay.
away, because I'm hitting the road in the morning. Otherwise, I'd be able to. Some of the stuff I've got it right on memorized, but because I don't want to misquote anything. But
yeah, and Aramaic's interesting because it's somewhere between Hebrew, ancient Hebrew, and modern Arabic. It's somewhere in transition.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I tell people that it's like Aramaic and Hebrew. It's like I tell people, like as a joke, if you want to learn Hebrew, learn Aramaic and then swap the consonants and the vowels back and forth. And they're like, what are you talking about? Or I'll
right.
say, if you want to learn Arabic, learn Aramaic and drop the ah sound at the end of most of the words. It's funny because they're three. Not only are they three Abrahamic religions from the same tree, you know, Judaism is the roots, Christianity is the tree that bears the fruit and goes out and takes the message out, and Islam is that fruit that reaches absolute ripeness and falls in absolute submission back to the roots to regenerate the system. Unfortunately, they're also the three that are wanting to kill each other the most in the world, it seems.
Yeah, and the irony of that always blows my mind.
Yeah, and it's three sides of one single coin, if that's possible. But yeah, you know, once that we mentioned, you know, we were talking about sounds and things, or you know, like the sound of Aramaic. I would love to offer a word which can really transform your life. I actually do gatherings. I'm doing one in Raleigh, North Carolina, tomorrow night at a place called Dancing Moon Bookstore, and then I've got Unity Church in Myrtle Beach over the weekend. And one of the things that I do in most, if not all, of my gatherings is that we intone, do vocal intonation, which is a practice that goes back thousands of years, even long before Yeshua's time, where you actually learn a sacred word in the sacred teachings, and you elongate the vowel sounds, you kind of soften the consonant sounds. And the first word of the Lord's Prayer begins, Avun Dvashmaya Nitkara Shma. And that Avun sound, almost like A-W-O-O-N in the Eastern dialects, it would be Avun, and the Western would be Abwun with more like a B sound. But the Awun sound is that word translated as our Father, more accurately, our one absolute eternal being of which we are born forth. And you can actually take that word Awun, there's many words in Aramaic, and tone it. And I'll give you an example of what I mean. It sounds like this. Try just Awun, and it's amazing how one tone. I do gatherings where we do that almost nonstop for 2 hours with crystal bowls and bells and chimes. It's amazing just saying and tell everybody, if you can remember that, write A-W-O-O-N down on paper, and when the show's over, just sit there and just do it one time and see how you feel after that one tone, that one
right.
intonation.
And it's very, very close to the full pronunciation of Om.
Oh, absolutely. It's the
Om. So it's very interesting.
Om. Absolutely.
I'm very excited. It's late in the show, but we have a caller.
Cool.
So let's see. Let's talk to Diane from New York.
Hi there.
Hi, Diane from New York.
Hey, Diane.
Hey, how you doing? I just wanted to thank both of you. This is an extraordinary program. And I'm really delighted. I really, really am delighted that you invited me, and I'm delighted that I was able to hear this. There's
so
many things. You're welcome. There are so many things that he has addressed that have been running around my head. So,
God, I can really feel your heart right now. I can really feel it. You're just buzzing. I can feel that energy, that electricity almost.
Oh,
thank
yes.
Thank you for calling
definitely.
In.
Definitely. And I think, as you probably know, I'm a very curious creature and always thinking, always introspective. But he's just, he's dynamite.
Where in New York are you?
New York.
New York. go to my email list and sign up on my email list and contact me because, I haven't done anything in New York. I've been on Long Island. I've done things in North Jersey and stuff, but I'd love to come to New York, too. So.
You need to do things not only in New York, but in Westchester, which is...
Yeah, absolutely.
You know where that is? Okay.
Yes, yeah.
Well, Diane, I can get you guys together on Facebook and work that out. And as soon as you said you're in New York City, I know which Diane this is. It's so good to meet you. So we only have a few minutes to close. So thank you so much. It's so good to hear your voice.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Be good, both of you. Bye-bye.
Thank you,
Diane.
So it's very interesting how much of the... My audience comes from Facebook connections, and Diane is somebody I've had a long conversations with on Facebook. So it's very
I love
nice
her energy. She has great energy. So
yeah, she definitely does. So again, give your website so people can find you.
It's DaleAllenHoffman.com, or you can go to AramaicHealingCircle.com, or you can go to the Farkas Files website and click. The thing was on there. The MP3
is
on there.
Yeah, thefarkasfiles.com will have a link to this, to the recording of this, and that page will have your contact info.
Yeah, and the cool thing about recordings is you can listen to them over and over, and you're going to hear something different every time. So,
right, cool. And with our podcasts are now on iTunes. So if you search for Farkas Files, you can get to, well, I don't know, we must have 45 of them at this point.
Yeah, you can search. I mean, I've got hundreds of files myself on iTunes from different CD programs and gazillions of radio shows and stuff. So search for both of us. That would be cool.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. This has been great fun.
I feel like it just started, so I got to come back.
Yeah, we haven't scratched the surface of my questions, much less once people really realize what this conversation is about, the questions that we would get from others. So let's have our online conversation and figure out more ways that we can do stuff together, because this is
absolutely
very enriching for me, certainly. I hope you're having a good time.
Yeah, and, it's been an honor.
Would love
really
to continue it.
Absolutely. Thank you, David.
Thank you so much. Again, our guest is Dale Allen Hoffman, and his website is DaleAllenHoffman.com. If you're curious about my work, you can go to HouseHealing.com, and cleverly hiding on the contact tab is every conceivable way of contacting me, including you can make an appointment with my online calendar for a 20-minute assessment of what's going on for you and whether my work is going to be appropriate. So please take advantage of that. My guest next week is also another fascinating healer, Stacy Kersival, and I'm really looking forward to that conversation going in, once again, a totally different direction, which is part of the juice to this program, is we're all on this shamanic, mystical healing path, and there are so many variations on it, so many interesting things that people have learned and ways that people have learned to share their gifts, but we're all doing the same thing. We're all on the same path. So thank you, Dale. Thank you to all my guests that have been on here, because this is so much fun for me. And thank you to everybody that's been listening. So until next Thursday at 9 o'clock Eastern, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio.